I happened to be in a very interesting race one time. We heard of this sort of epic canoe race that they have that starts up toward Cooperstown in Otsego Lake up there. And the race would run from Otsego down to Bainbridge. It's called the General Clinton Canoe Regatta. And it sounded so exciting. We start in the lake, so there's this hundreds of canoes on this boat line out in the middle of the lake. And then the gun goes on. They actually had to start in different heats because they were professionals and whatever. But I remember being among just hundreds of canoes. The gun goes up, and they told us that at the end, you get a trophy. If you finish the race, you get a trophy no matter what, just a participation mark, and a turkey dinner. Apparently, they had this big old picnic set up down at Bainbridge, and I thought that was great. And it does sound like a great deal of fun and adventure. And it's a wild ride, and it was. It was so much fun, and it was a wild ride, except when you begin to calculate this element into it, that even today, it is reckoned as the longest single-day flatwater canoe race in the world. 72 miles. That's what I signed up for that day. Single-day race, 72 miles. Well, to make a long story short, with our probably 90-pound-plus, massive aluminum behemoth canoe, and our standard-issue, big old heavy wooden paddles, I think they must have been made out of some weighted oak or something. And after having acquired the worst sunburn of my life on my inner ankles and on the tops of my lily-white feet, and after having been through this cycle, in that 72 miles, in this cycle of losing all hope and getting a second wind, and losing all hope and getting a third wind, and doing that about 9 or 10 times, and after 13 and a half hours of paddling, and after dark, and after finally reasoning that there would be no one waiting for us at the end to greet us with turkey dinner, and after calculating that finishing the race would have required more than an additional hour of paddling, and after having come closer than I ever could have imagined to fisticuffs with my very easygoing friend Blaze, and after 68 miles, we pulled out. That's really what happened. I'm kind of embarrassed. Let us run with perseverance, right? The race that's marked out before us. That is what actually happened. We headed home without a lot of chipper conversation in the car. There was someone on a bridge, and we stopped at that bridge and got out and went home. But let me just hypothetically change the end of that story a little bit. This is very hypothetical because we were right. There was no one waiting for us at the other end after dark down there, after our 13 and a half hours. But what if it had been different? What if, at that point of crisis where we wonder about getting out, what if suddenly we began to look, and it's dark, it really was dark. What if we began to see lights along the edge of the stream? What if those who had finished the race began, and just one by one you see a flashlight? And then more flashlights. And there were many, many that finished all 72 miles, people who knew what it was before going into it. Maybe have trained ahead of time. But what if in the dark we began to see flashlights, and then many flashlights, and then hundreds of flashlights, and a veritable forest of flashlights, and then voices chanting, 4 more miles. 4 more miles. You can do it. We've made it. We're still alive. We're actually feeling pretty good. And by the way, they've only begun the celebration. Down there, it's not over. There are people waiting for you. There are huge tents lit up. Hundreds of people. Bluegrass music. They're keeping the bringing on the fresh food and the ice cold drinks and the pumpkin pie. And the place goes wild every time another one crosses this line. It just goes wild when they do that. And hey, the fireworks don't even begin for a couple of more hours. 4 more miles. Come on! And finish. I really honestly think, and this is hypothetical, but I honestly think that I knew my fatigue. I know it well to this day, the nature of my fatigue at that moment. But if that had been the case, if I really had reason to think that there was something at the finish line, and that someone had been there, and that there was somebody waiting for us, and that there was much cheering to be had, I really think we could have finished. I don't think that last hour and a half or so would have been much different than the previous six. You know, we'd have just plodded on and we'd have finished. And in fact, our anticipation would have increased toward the end. Now, our passage in Hebrews likens our life of faith to a race that calls for endurance to the end. And even mentions these cheering people along the side, if you want to put it that way. Our author has spoken of those recorded for us in Scripture who had faced many hardships along the way, faced conflict and opposition, sometimes overwhelming odds. Those who were called upon with less revelation than you and I have to hope against hope, hope against all circumstances that looked like no hope whatsoever. And for those whose rewards were not in this tangible life, they had to wait till their death to enter into some of these things. But who acted bravely and who endured even through death itself when it came to that? There's plenty of those in this record, and who could bear testimony that it was worth it. He pictures those as, I think, bearing witness to us. It's worth it. Cheering us on. By bearing witness, God can be found faithful. Therefore, now we give an instruction, you see. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, what? Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. How about that idea of the great cloud? Why use the word cloud? What a great cloud of witnesses. Is it just some heavenly thing? No. A cloud of witnesses, I think, is probably as simple as the idea of a stadium setting for this illustration. He's likening it to a race. And as you, from Olympic Stadium, look up into the crowd, everybody melds together. There are so many. And we use a similar metaphor, and you would look up to a sea of faces. The use of the word cloud is just similar. What a mass of witnesses testify to us that God can be trusted from all of Scripture. We are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And what does it mean that they are witnesses? We are surrounded by many observers. Is that because witness could be used that way? Many who witness us, or many observers. I don't think that's the principal way this is being used here. We are surrounded by a great cloud of those who can bear witness, those who can testify to the faithfulness of God. I think that's the nature of what we're seeing. We're surrounded by a great cloud of these. Let us therefore run. And the instruction, let us throw off everything that hinders this. The race marked out before us. And we begin to get a sense for what this is. They believed and they lived their lives out in faith. This race, this living out of faith. Let us then throw off everything that hinders. Again, I think the metaphor is probably about a foot race. And such a race cannot be run well when bogged down by a lot of heavy clothing. I think the illustration is very simple. Like lots of extra clothing. We need to throw this off so that we can run quickly. What these verses call upon us to strive for, I think, in our life as believers, to make the application, is to shed that which encumbers, that which drags on this life of faith. Why? Because there is something similar about our walk of faith, a run of faith, and a race. There's something similar. That's why the illustration is used. There is a likeness. We ought to run it this way. So why would you do that all bogged down? And we need to shed things that would encumber. I think we find a lot of talk like this in various passages. In Philippians 3:13, for instance, the Apostle Paul spoke of the way he lived his Christian life, using words like this, straining toward what's ahead. That's a phrase from Paul. It's how one lives the Christian life, straining toward what is ahead. I press on toward the goal. And it's a way to think about how we operate. And maybe a way to notice that we might not be operating. We might be all covered with heavy robes and clothing and just have forgotten about that for months or longer. And he wants us to think of it in these terms of a race. Paul used the sports comparison also in 1 Corinthians 9:25. He said it this way, listen up, 1 Corinthians 9:25 and 26. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. I therefore do not run like a man running aimlessly. You see, our life of faith, not to be run aimlessly, carelessly, draped with, you know, things that conflict with this race, we're encouraged to think of it as a race. And I think part of the specific of this passage has to do with the context of what's said a little bit later about so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. These encumbrances that we might identify, and they're not listed here what those encumbrances, except sin. The sin that so easily, you know, entangles as you try to race. But in the context of perseverance and keeping on, I think I want to be specific about that. Again, I think I could liken this situation to my canoe race. What was our crippling disadvantage? This behemoth canoe. And heavy paddles. Only in a race illustration you understand. But the weight of those paddles made all the difference by way of encumbrance when you calculated over 100,000 strokes or so. You know, and 13 and a half, I don't know how many oars we put in the water in 13 and a half hours. But encumbered by those paddles, it just ruined the possibilities. And as a matter of fact, I remember they started the professionals later, you know, and we knew what time they were going to start. It seemed like almost immediately after that time we're being passed. And there's a wake, you know. The boat goes like this. As they go, and they're going, and in about 8 hours, they're done. 8 hours and whatever, bang, they're done. And after 13 and a half, I'm dying, and it's 68 miles, and I'm not done. I actually looked some things up on this. Their canoes are in the low 20s in poundage, you know, aquadynamic and all of that. And their paddles, are you ready for this? I checked this for accuracy, between 7 and 8 ounces. Ounces. You picture me with my standard issue wooden Grumman paddle, you know, and you picture someone working with a paddle with this leaf-shaped blade on the end, you know, at 7 or 8 ounces, and it just makes a big difference. These are all only by way of illustration, you understand. Again, the illustration of Hebrews is a running race, but it's about a race, and it's to help us understand. The point is the same. Do we take an approach to our lives, to the goal and the destination to which we are called, the way in which we pursue that goal? Do we run it like a race? Do we engage the process like there is this good goal that calls for focus, it calls for freedom from distraction and hindrance, it warrants all of our invested energies, it calls for persistence, it invites every hearty effort. And I think this is helping us. This kind of illustration is helping us. Thinking of this heavy clothing illustration, it brings to my mind how if we are to view our lives as a race, it helps us with a way of thinking, a framework for thinking. For instance, with regard to our walk and race of life, the question would not be, how much are we allowed to carry along? Does that make sense? It wouldn't make any sense in a running race for someone to come to their coach with a list and say, well, I just want to know what's allowed. You know, what's allowed? What may I carry along on this race? Don't I get to carry anything? how about this? It's not very heavy. But may I carry it? I'd like to take my Walkman. You know, I'd like to wear this shirt. I'd like to this and that or whatever it is, you know, as far as carrying along. And it's just, again, the illustration. But the question, is it allowed, is not necessarily the question. How about a different kind of question about our lives? The fundamental question of what we ask sort of every day, you know, does God allow this? Does God allow that? Can I do this? Can I carry this along? As opposed to maybe this question. Does it enhance the race? Does it, a positive question. If I'm asking questions about things, is this part of the race? Does this enhance? You know, on the canoe race, a power bar really, you know, really did enhance the race. The guys had these backpacks with their water was stored, you know, that way, and it was tubes up, you know, up to here, and it, you know, just never having to reach, never having to do anything. But maybe it enhances the race. But whatever. Likewise, I think in our Christian lives, it's a subtle difference, but such an important difference. Our whole approach to God in walking out life, the is it allowed? Can I do this? Is this okay? Or is this serving the race? Because if we're just always in the mindset of is it allowed, then maybe our focus is not so much on the goal and engaging that high goal, but our mind might be on the things that we'd like and not really on the goal. I want to further define what is meant by this phrase, the race marked out for us. The race marked out for us. Again, Philippians chapter 3 comes to mind where it says in verse 12, where the Apostle Paul said, I press on for what? To take hold of that for which Christ took hold of me. If you want to know what this race is, I think that's a good description of it. What are we pressing on toward? To take hold of that for which Christ took hold of us. Jesus saves us with good purpose. And there are a variety of passages that I think help us with this. Titus 2:14 talks in terms of a goal. Jesus gave himself for us to accomplish this. And we're given the definition of this. So here's Titus 2:14. He gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for himself a people that are his very own, eager to do what is good. That helps. Helps us in understanding what this goal is. Ephesians 4:22 through 24 is helpful. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, and to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Pressing on toward the goal for which Christ got a hold of me looks like that, because we know what he was doing, redeeming us from wickedness, creating us anew, a renewing of our mind, to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. These things give definition to this phrase, a race marked out for us. And I also want to talk about this with regard to the race. We strive toward incalculable blessing. There is an end to this race. It's not like there's going to be no one there to greet us at the end. Rather, we strive toward incalculable blessing, which I think shows up in instructions and verses and prayers like Ephesians 1:18, where the Apostle Paul prayed, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he's called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints. I want you to know so well that what we strive toward is unbounded riches, that you live this life pursuing it, entering into it. And of course, what is the greatest blessing of all? It is God himself being for us what he's promised to be, supplying to us all that needs to be supplied, everything you need, everything that is joy, flows from Him. And so that's what we're striving toward. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And of course, as this passage talks about throwing off things that hinder, the next phrase is the sin, which so easily entangles. Have you ever had a dream where you're trying to run and you can't? Do you know the feeling? What does it feel like? It's like a quicksand feeling around your legs. And you may wake up and what's happened? The sheets are entangled, you know. All right, but it doesn't take the sheets, actually. It's been a dream situation. But just, you know, all I'm trying to say is, you know that feeling of encumbrance. I cannot run. And just by way, you know, as he talks about sin that entangles, it readily, I tried to study this word that he's talking about, it's a ready surrounder. You know, it does that easily. And we need to throw that off. We got a long haul here. Let's not drag that around. Boy, we need to learn that. And isn't it true that we could enter into seasons of our life where we've forgotten that we're in a race, where we may have become very entangled and just sort of lost sight of that, you know, and we're slogging, just wrapped in sins. And so the words, throw it off, everything it hinders, and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run. Do you know, after you wake up, after that dream, that sense of refreshment when you can move again? You know, one of the worst dreams in my life was one of those non-movement dreams. Scared me to death because it was no movement at all. And I thought I was fully awake and there was no movement happening. But anyway, we've just got one verse today. There's a lot in it. Therefore, and we take it in its context, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything it hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us.